Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everyone. Welcome to episode 267 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
Good morning. Good evening. Good day and good night. I don't know what time you're getting this, but it's late here in the Movie Maverick studio, and we're getting this done on our new night.
AKA our mom's basements.
That's right. Party on, Garth. And this is going to be doing now on Thursdays, if you haven't known. We missed last week, but we'll be back with you every Thursday night, so check us out on our new night and varying time, I should say. But tonight we'll be discussing our thoughts on Chappie and Unfinished Business, as well as the second Marigold Hotel in the box office ace prediction game. Trivia going on, little gangster movie trivia. So I think you can get this one tonight. Also, yeah, gangsta, if you didn't know. And Harrison Ford, damn near crashed today. There'll be a lot of Han Solo jokes around after this one. Get it? Flying around. And also, talking about Robert Townsend's return to the directorial chair, David O. Russell continuing to blow up on his actors. Didn't this guy do this a while back? Did you ever see that video of Russell blowing up on Lily Tomlin?
Yeah.
Fucking awesome, isn't it? I think whatever you're doing, stop the podcast and go over to YouTube and watch David O. Russell blowing up on Lily Tomlin. It's good for a laugh. Our reviews tonight. I'm going to talk about Focus and Kingsman. Trevor's got The Fault in Our Stars. I'm real interested to hear about that because did you make it through that one on one try? Out of curiosity.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, extra credit for you on that one. What else are we talking about? Predestination, Laggies, and Annabella. Or is it Annabelle or Annabella?
Annabelle. I like Annabella, but it's Annabelle.
I like it, Annabella better.
And Gone Girl, right?
The girl is gone. That. Talking about that one. The trailer section is where I'm most interested
Good
tonight.
Good Lord, we got to tell the trailer section.
We have a very well-endowed trailer section tonight.
Okay. Big movies, small movies.
It's right. Medium-sized movies. They're all in there. Papa, mama, baby. And we've got about 9 trailers we're going to talk about tonight. I think the majority of them are highly intriguing. So let's waste no time, because we don't like to do that at all here, and jump right in to this box office prediction game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
All right, let's play this damn game. We got 3 movies. Let's move it. The big one's Chappie. What do you think, man? What do you think?
I don't think this reaches the opening of RoboCop last February.
No shit.
Yeah. Right? This is an Aussie production, technically, right? Or is this New Zealand? I don't know.
Well, it's South African.
That's right. But why do they talk like they're Australian in it? Right?
Oh, they have a South African accent.
Is that what it is?
Which is British, which is just like Australian, which is kind of a British accent. But yeah.
The most interesting aspect of what I've come to learn about this movie is that I can't see the main actor's name. I'm not even going to attempt to, but he was the cat from District 9. That he was the one that they used as the 3D animation, the body double for Chappie. I didn't realize that. Did you know that?
I just thought it was like Andy Serkis or something.
That's what I figured, because I figured he had pretty much the corner of the market on this. But
regardless, we're both at the same here. You said 19.1. I'm saying 19.
Okay, we're right in line with each other.
This goes all the way up to on box office ace that ranges. We're actually kind of more towards the low end, but a lot of people are saying 20 to 25. So
that's the average around.
I think that's the average is 21. So, which is basically RoboCop, but we don't think that's possible.
Now, I think the trickiest one of the weekend is the second exotic Marigold Hotel. This really is interesting to me because you don't often get the cash grab sequel to a kind of esoteric film like the first one. This isn't the Expendables, right? I mean, what's going on here? Why is there a sequel? And this looks like it is adding nothing new. The trailers aren't very
well. The first
endearing.
One did well. That's why there's a sequel, right?
Okay, but a lot of these movies do well as one-offs. But this doesn't seem like sequel ready. I don't know.
Well, they're just gonna make the same movie again, and hope that the old folks come out to see it again.
I don't think that this looks amusing at all. I mean, I thought the first one was at least half amusing, but the trailer, the one-liners in this are very scattershot and on the level of TV sitcom writing, it looks like. But all of a sudden, this is getting a wide release. This was only supposed to be limited, but late in the day change, and this is now going to be a semi-wide release. So,
well, the box office ace average right now is 9.8 million. I'm going 8.5. Where are you going?
I went 10.5.
Yeah, so.
All right, so we're split
there. Big
hoopla,
yeah.
And Unfinished Business, which is Vince Vaughn's latest.
Which really want to see. I know you really want to see it. I mean, what are the chances this isn't a flop?
No, this is bad. This is not going to do well. Although I think this might have a secondary life on video.
Because that's what it looks perfect for, right? I mean, that's how I want to see it when I see it.
Which begs the question, are movies like this going to start just coming right onto video on demand? Does this...
Well, we're getting close, right? Adam Sandler's already done his deal with Netflix. So stuff like this would be perfect for that.
Absolutely. So what are you going on this one?
I'm going to go 8.
Yeah, I went 8.7 because I like my fractionals, but we're right in line with each other on this. I think most people are pegging this under 10 million. Delivery Man, which didn't open up well, at least had legs, and that hung on for a while. Did you like Delivery Man?
It was okay.
Okay. I know you weren't keen on it, but I've heard decent things about it. I know Chris Pratt's got a little role in that as well. So people saw a pre-Guardians, Chris Pratt and that. But
I mean, his kids are good. The actors are all good, but
it had at least decent legs. It had a 3-time multiplier. So if this opens up with 8 and even has a 3-time multiplier,
well, it had a far broader ideal though than Unfinished Business. Looks more of like trying to grab the college crowd almost.
I think we have seen the last of the Vince Vaughn $100 million club movies, you know, like Four Christmases, Couples Retreat, things like that just came out and were
they need to
sure
be
fire hits. But this might be good though, but this looks a little
it'll be good
too small.
not in the way that it needs to be good. Right? We'll watch it and think, "Oh, that was pretty good," but it's not a big movie.
Well, the internship was supposed to be, and that didn't, for whatever reason, which I don't think is necessarily
that was
a bad
closer,
film.
But it just it's really not the it's not very good.
Well, it is at least an attempt it to be a bigger.
I agree. Yeah, kind you're of, right. I mean, that was a good shot. It just happened to miss. It's unfortunate that with so many misses now, you get into a row of misses, and then people kind of give up after a while until we get a hit again, and then maybe he'll be able to come back.
Well, that's our predictions for the box office ace prediction game. On the standings chart, I still am in fourth place, trailing a couple of strong contenders.
You're not in fourth place
anymore. And no, I thought I was in fourth, and you're in fifth.
No, not.
No, we have a new stand.
We updated.
Oh, where am I at tonight, my man? Give me the standing. Did I drop?
You're in. Yeah, I'm in fourth, and you're in sixth.
Oh my goodness! Somebody kicked me in the jimmy. Sixth spot,
but yeah,
focus fucked me up.
But
lost my focus.
We're only 8 million apart, so.
Well, I mean, the silver lining is always there, I guess. But goodness, I dropped.
We're only 30 million off from the first. So this is really still very close. We haven't had a very big disagreement, you know, for anyone. We've all been very close with our guesses so far, so it's been a close race. But we'll see when we get into summer. That's when things are going to get shifty.
Yeah, summer and the winter season, of course, especially with some huge titles on the schedule for this year. So you can still get into that Box Office Ace prediction game, obviously, at boxofficeace.com. Join in and play against Trevor and I. Let's jump right into this news, and the big news of the day is that Harrison Ford has made an emergency landing this afternoon on a golf course in Venice, California. Aviation specialists are quoted as saying it was a perfect landing in such a situation, and you can expect nonetheless from Air Force One captain, Han Solo. I mean, he made the parcel run in 12 – I mean, right? The Kessel run in 12 parsecs, I should say. So – does this surprise you? I'm surprised Harrison Ford didn't just walk out, stitch himself back up, and get in there, fix it, and drive home. I mean, is there anything this guy can't do?
Well, he's apparently fine, so.
Do you think that he wasn't allowed?
What are we supposed to say about this?
I don't know. I'm just wondering if he wasn't allowed to fly these planes during the filming of Star Wars because of some shit like this, you know?
Well, I'm sure he's not allowed to fly during filming because that would, I mean, for obvious reasons. You're not allowed to do a lot of that kind of stuff.
Now, I want you to picture in your mind you're out for a nice day of golf. And you not only do you see a fucking plane crash, but out pops Harrison Ford. And Indiana Jones pops out.
He's lucky, though. Airplane. I mean, there's no better place to crash than a golf course. There were two doctors there, you know, just probably golfing or hanging out. You know, it is a golf course. It's a good place.
I mean, this guy it's pretty impressive, to be honest with you.
Well, the plane, here's some trivia for you. The plane was built in the same year he was born, so it's as old as he was.
And that machine broke down before his machine did. So
yeah, there you go. He outlived it.
Well done for the Fordmeister. Keeps on ticking. All right, a little other news here. The Expendables today was announced that it is going to be translated into an event series. And I really don't know what event series means anymore. Does that just mean like a television series? But something they make a big hoopla about?
I know. They haven't – the word has been sparse. But this is being made by the TV branch of Lionsgate, so it's a television thing. I mean, my guess is that it's going to be an actual TV show, but it could just be a series of movies. I don't know.
That's what I would.
They have no cast. Yeah, no, but cast if you, notes. I mean, if, I when like you look at movie. Like Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, this would be practically the same thing as or is very similar to that.
Yeah, but the kind of budget needed for an action adventure show is going to be too great for something like Spike or some secondary cable channel to carry. So they're going to have to do maybe.
I disagree. It just wouldn't be that big. Well, they're talking CBS, right? I mean, CBS is the partner, is the guys on this, along with Lionsgate TV. So they have backing, but I don't know. Could it be good? Sure, it could be amazing, but it's just such an infant stage right now.
NCIS,
you have to see who are they going to get? Yeah,
they have TV to go stars. The Expendables of TV. You know, you need Dirk Benedict.
The idea, for as far as we hear, but is that even possible? I mean, Renegade, you could get
absolutely,
which would be awesome. Fucking sign me up for that. I'm watching immediately, but. I can't think of any other TV shows because obviously Chuck Norris is going to be too old, but he could make cameos here and there. He could even be like, you know, the guy running it.
Yeah, right? The Charlie of Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, easily. Right. I could see that.
There's $100 million idea.
I don't even know if he'd be interested in it. Right. At this point,
royalty check there.
Retired, if you will. So yeah, but I don't know. Who do you get? I don't know. I can't think of anyone. Hulk Hogan.
I think we get Don Johnson, Sammo Hung. We're looking around for other people. Maybe Arsenio Hall in there. We just get a smorgasbord of random actors. Throw them all together and let them go for it. Well, Wesley Snipes also is making a television appearance. You hear about this? He's going to be just shooting a pilot for a detective kind of action detective-y type television series. They're selling him his first real project. Since the Expendables here on a side note. So Snipes is going the way of television and not a bad idea to start getting audiences maybe reacquainted with the actor after he burnt so many bridges in Hollywood during his career. And that's somebody obviously to get for the television show.
Yeah, he's... I don't know. I guess he's an actor.
Used to be at least.
Yeah, I don't know what he's done. Could be good, but sounds, I don't know. I don't think USA is making those kinds of shows anymore, so.
They tried doing a show like this a long time ago called Soldier of Fortune. Do you recall that? Yeah. Produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. That wasn't very good. And I just hope.
Well, these often aren't very good, and they only last. Like I say, if it's not on USA, which then it would last, you know, 20 years, they last maybe, you know, 3-4 seasons tops before they give up on them.
The best chance this has and it would be on something like Stars or an Upshot little cable deal like that because they would have...
That is true, yeah. They would at least be able to do some more adult-themed things or at least it would feel like it.
It'd feel a little more similar to the movies at least.
Yeah.
And this is officially kind of, I think, a shot that there is going to be no more feature movies because they're not going to cheapen the brand to such an extent with this television show.
Oh, because it was such a rich brand.
Well, no, but you're not aiding it in any sense. This isn't Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're old. They're not going to be able to make the movies forever. Strike while the iron's somewhat warm, right? Otherwise, obviously, this is Stallone's heavily involved in this. I mean, what's he going to do?
Yeah, franchise fatigue.
So he's got to
set in there.
He's got to make money. He wants to work, so there you go.
You think David O. Russell is going to continue to work with good actors if he keeps treating them like shit? Because reports came from the set this week that, or last week, I should say, that Jennifer Lawrence and David O. Russell got into a huge, huge argument. Reports that the set was shut down for a day because of it. Lawrence has come out and said that, you know, she loves this man, he's a teddy bear, and all sorts of things. And this, you know, reminds me of obviously the I Heart Huckabees incident that has been widely seen, where Russell absolutely exploded on his actors, including Lily Tomlin, over and over, maybe justly in some sense, but obviously over the top. But does a guy like Russell, is he allowed to do this? You know, I mean, at what point do you say you're just being an asshole? You mean, regardless if you're a good filmmaker or not, you're just being abusive.
We know that he's done this before. And I think even with Jennifer Lawrence, there's been things said about him fighting with people on every movie, right?
What a torturous fucking experience to make a movie with this guy then.
Yeah, but if Clooney
has come out and said, you know, he would never work with him again.
Because if he can get you an award, yeah, Clooney doesn't need him though.
Yeah, if he can get you an
award. He's one of the few guys making big award movies right now. You know? So you can't really, I don't know, what can you do with him? He's the next Scorsese right now, right? And not in the sense that he's so damn good, but just in the sense that he's making those kinds of movies, and not a lot of people are making those.
He did have a movie that just came out that he had walked off of a couple years back, the one with Jessica Biel where she had the arrow in her head. I cannot recall the name of it. It just came out in a limited premiere. It really came out and very quietly a couple weeks back. I want to say Jake Gyllenhaal's. It's got a hell of a cast, and if you saw it, you'll know. I don't even think it's completed. I think they cut it together, scraps of it, to make it a movie. But it just reminds you that, you know, Russell has worked with huge talent. I mean, was up for The Fighter, American Hustle, and they all come back to him, and you just think like, Wahlberg,
you know, Batman.
Hey, he ain't pulling this shit on Wahlberg, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'd like to see him and Batman go a couple of rounds.
Yeah, Christian Bale?
You know that shit would get, I mean, that would end in a fist fight.
Well, yeah, well, maybe in Bale's weakened state as Dickie. It ain't working out so well.
Maybe, but he still had all the, you know, fake movie training. You're right. He might be able to do some damage to David O. Russell.
Maybe that should be the next movie, just watching Bale beat the shit out of David O. Russell. I think I'd like that more than anything I've seen Russell make so far. But the point is that it's hard for me because of all this behind the scenes shit you hear about the guy and this kind of
it's hard behavior. To like him.
It's not hard to like it. His movies are almost clouded in a way. It, to me, it carries over to the movies. It's hard for me to like his movie. It's almost like Paul Thomas Anderson in a lot of ways, because Paul Thomas Anderson movies are defiant to me. You know, it's the same kind of thing. Like me if you want. You know, I don't care. Like me if you want. I'm a genius. You don't get that attitude from it?
No.
That's what I feel from it, damn it.
I don't get that.
All right, well,
it's fine. I'm a little sensitive. I liked David O. Russell stuff.
I liked his early stuff. I really liked Flirting with Disaster. I think that's kind of his unseen.
Well, Three Kings, oh, please. It's really not that good. I don't know why everyone says that thing's such a great thing. It's okay, but it's, I don't know. The latest stuff he's done is probably much better, but Three Kings is really good.
Three Kings is undoubtedly excellent.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, there's.
Can't say anything bad about that.
Yeah, so.
But you would have never have known that him and Clooney, you know, got into a huge fight on that movie.
Because the movie is so good, but the fact that Clooney.
But you wouldn't know on most of his movies that he was mean to people. The movies don't play like that. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but the movies themselves don't have that. any anger doesn't seem to come through in it.
And yet he's still getting nominated. So, I mean, the other people in the industry nominate him that have obviously worked.
I think the movies speak for themselves. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk real briefly here about Robert Townsend, who we have not spoken about at all because he has not been in the news.
He's been gone.
Yeah. But, he, you know, I liked Robert Townsend when he was doing his thing. I mean, I liked a lot of his movies and even him as a personality. I always found kind of a warm screen presence. He is going to be back directing a remake of Brewster's Millions, which some might remember was the 1985 comedy starring Richard Pryor and John Candy. And I think about that and I thought, like, that's not a very good movie. I mean, it's a cool concept. A guy's got 48 hours.
But at the time, it made a lot of money.
It did, but it's directed by Walter Hill, the original. That is a bizarre credit to me. Can you fucking believe that? Walter Hill? And this is the guy who directed 48 Hours, yeah, which kind of has comedic elements, but really is well known for hard kind of like westerns and gangster pictures, genre pictures really, but not anything comedic. I looked at that. I thought it was a misprint. I couldn't believe Walter Hill directed that first one. I don't really remember the first one being all that funny.
I mean, but you're forgetting. I mean, Walter Hill has directed a lot of stuff, including, you know, comedies.
Well, 48 Hours had comedic elements. It's not an outright comedy like Beverly Hills Cop is, or even Trading Places.
No, but I would still say it's. I mean, he doesn't just do one thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I just thought that was bizarre when I saw that credit. I was expecting John Landis. I don't know who I was expecting. Some 80s fluffmeister, but not Walter Hill, you know? So it was kind of bizarre to me. But the casting here has got to be everything. You think they try to go highball with this?
I fucking have no idea.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I don't know where you go with this. I don't even know if this is a good idea.
Well, we said that about a couple of remakes, and they're doing it nonetheless. So I guess the less said, the better on this. But Robert Townsend, good to see him back behind the camera. He did direct a very small movie with Ving Rhames about the life of Sonny Liston called The Phantom Punch. Mm-hmm. I reviewed a couple years back, and it was really off. Ving Rhames was excellent in the role, but that movie was dog shit. So hopefully he's back in better form than that, because that was really, really bad.
Maybe because he's done some movies that I really liked, Red Heat, and I mean that last Stallone one he did was pretty good.
Are you talking about Walter Hill? Or I was talking about Townsend.
Oh,
yeah, no, Walter Hill, absolutely. Shit, Walter Hill. Two of the most underrated Walter Hill ones are Extreme Prejudice, which I always recommend, and Johnny Handsome, which is the best Mickey Rourke movie no one's ever seen. That is a hard
Streets of Fire. I mean, he's done so much
Streets
stuff.
Streets of Fire. I love Streets of Fire.
Randomly weird, but still very good.
Yeah, I tried
the
to watch
is really good.
Streets of Fire recently, and I only have it on DVD, right? And my new TV's got that super HD high frame rate shit, you know, that I was telling you about that I love, and that you scoff at me. That movie looks so – it ghosts so bad on this – I can't even watch it. I don't know if they have it on Blu-ray or not, but, I mean, Streets of Fire.
So. I think there's a special Blu-ray edition that came out a couple years ago maybe.
Takes care of my ghosting problem there. But yeah, Streets of Fire is fantastic. But Streets of Fire is kind of well known. But I'm telling you, Johnny Handsome is a fantastic film noir that most people have not seen. Put it on your Netflix account if you haven't seen it. It's really worth a watch. It's a great, great crime thriller with Mickey Rourke before he left to become a boxer for a brief period of time. Check it out. Let's take a quick break.
Oh, please, yes.
All right, we'll come back with some reviews in just a minute.
Proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
News podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Okay. And we're back.
And we are here again.
Oh, let's do something. You didn't do the trivia.
I didn't do the trivia. You ready for the trivia? You're waiting for my trivia, huh? I didn't want to stump you again. Now, the last week you got it, didn't you?
I find your trivia to be trivial.
I find it to be exactly the title of this column. So thank you for the lead in on our trivial trivia. And tonight, it is about gangster movies, but not the gangster movies you're thinking of, gangster comedies. So think that as we go into this. And it is Nora Ephron, who's well known from, Sleepless in Seattle, When Harry Met Sally, a bunch of good ones there. You watched a whole bunch of Nora Ephron movies recently, right? You Got Mail and things like that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, good writer. I like Nora Ephron. I think she passed away, actually. I think she's the late Nora Ephron, I should say. She was married at one point to Goodfellas writer Nicholas Pileglia, who also wrote Casino. And while he was getting information from Henry Hill, which would later turn into the experiences that would make the book for Wise Guy, which got turned into Goodfellas, the Scorsese classic, she used the idea of a guy with his protection for the vehicle of a Steve Martin movie. What is the name of this Steve Martin comedy? Are you there?
Am I doing it now, or are we?
I don't know. Do you have it?
Are we waiting for it?
No, give it to me if you got it, big guy.
My Blue Heaven, yeah.
My Blue Heaven, you're right.
With Rick Moranis as well.
This movie is void of laughs, is it not? But it's kind of pleasant, right? It's one of those pleasant movies, but it's not really funny.
It makes sense? Not really good.
No, it's
not. I mean, it's just, like I said, this is a movie that I know of, but I always forget. It's part of Steve Martin's canon. You know, it's part of his.
What I recall about this movie the most is that they build this awesome little league field, you know, for the kids. But yeah, this was a very minor entry. I think it's 1991, 1992, somewhere in there.
Yeah, but interesting. Early 90s.
Interesting how that idea sprouted was probably, you know, from listening to Henry Hill's exploits of what he was doing in the Witness Protection Program, and
which apparently was nothing.
Yeah. Using a fish store, pet store as a front.
All right.
Well, I'm glad we got that trivial trivia out of the way. If you do have a trivia question, or if you have something you'd like read on air, and we like to read it on air, you might want to put it on our Facebook page or email Trevor or I. Let's move on and talk about some movies. What have you seen recently?
All kinds of stuff.
I want to talk about Predestination, because this is that Ethan Hawke movie that I've been dying to see. I'm a big Ethan Hawke fan. It's the poor man's Tom Cruise, in my opinion. I love the guy. I really do like Ethan Hawke.
I
want to know what's going on with this movie, because I've heard nothing but good things about this.
Yeah, this movie's pretty damn awesome.
This is Predestination we're talking about.
Predestination. This movie's about time loop. I mean, this thing, really, if you want to get into time loops, this thing puts Looper to fucking shame. And I can't talk a lot about it because I don't want to give it away. You can figure it out, but the layers of this thing are like, I figured it out. And then I figured this out. And then that's that. Oh, and this is that.
And it goes along like that,
and it's just fucking great. This is definitely a one-off. Is the first time you see it, it's going to be the best time you see it, because any multiple viewings, you're already going to know no matter what. You're never going to forget. But I don't know. It's really, really good. That the writing is just great. The acting is fucking amazing. To give you an idea, this movie's not an action movie by any means, even though they tried to sell it as that. It's not. And it starts off, they're like, oh, and there's time travel. You're like, okay, that's cool. And then it steps into a bar scene. And it's just Ethan Hawke talking with Sarah Snook. She plays it's hard to talk about, but she plays another character.
The female character.
The female character, if you will. I guess I'm not giving anything away, because you already know she's a female, but she comes into the bar looking like a man, and he almost mistakes her for a man until she says, you know, I'm a female. And they make this bet that she has this story that she's going to tell him that's just going to blow his mind. And he says, fine, whatever. And they get into it, and she tells this whole story about essentially her past and where she comes from and all this. And it has literally nothing to do with time travel for a long time, but it's so goddamn captivating. And the story's so fucking odd. And it's so good the way it's shot, the way the story unfolds, just this little story of this person talking to another person in a bar. I don't know, it's like movie magic. It's like someone's created something out of nothing in a way. But just really good. Very good twists and turns is all I could say. I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to talk too much about it because I don't want to ruin it because it's really not. I mean, it is a little bit. It does prepare you for it. I wasn't prepared for that to happen. I thought this was going to be more of an action movie. The Spirig Brothers, the first movie with him, Daybreakers, the vampire movie, which was a little bit more on the action-y side. This movie's not at all. This movie's all cerebral. If you don't expect it to be, it's really weird because you're like, where the fuck is this going? And then when it hits, you're like, oh, shit. And it really does a good job. I recommend it a lot. I loved it.
All right. Highest recommendation then from you. And another one I want to talk about here before I get into my review, one that very much surprised me, was The Fault in Our Stars. Now, I've heard, once again, surprisingly positive reaction to this movie. I'm not a fan of the lead actress. I find her highly obnoxious. Is this going to ruin my viewing of this
movie? Shailene Woodley. I like her, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you don't like about her. So
she's too self-conscious in her acting. I find her acting to be very...
I don't get that from her at all.
No? Not even. I thought it was really bad in Divergent. No?
No.
Oh, goodness. Okay. However, in this, the movie...
I think she's good. I like her. I thought she was great in this. The other acting, obviously very good as well. And I liked the movie a lot. I thought it was really good.
Surprise you?
Surprising? I don't know if it's surprising. I mean, it's everything you expect it to be. It's just a step above a lot of the other stuff, similar things that were out there. You know, it's not a new idea by any means.
No, I mean, Christ, no. But this is a love story for the new generation. But
but it's really not. See, how far into it did you get? They do this whole thing where she, you know, how many times have we heard now, especially as of
late? Well, I haven't seen this thing yet. No, I haven't personally. I've only seen the trailer.
Well, let me tell you a little bit what it's actually about. It is a love story, sure, but she loves this book, and it's about the book is about death. You know, it's about someone dying, but she thinks it's like the truest. They don't pull punches. The author doesn't pull punches. It's the truest thing she can relate to because she herself has almost died a couple times. You know, she's a cancer person, and she meets this kid. And she recommends this book to him, and he really gets into it as well. And they have a romance and whatnot. They go to meet. The author, they get a chance to meet him kind of a before she dies kind of a thing, kind of like the guy who gets to go see Star Trek 2 before he died and all those kind of real things and fanboys in a way. It's a bit like fanboys, but better actually than fanboys. And William Dafoe plays this author, and it's not, I don't know, it's this movie's never, I guess, you know, it's never what you expect.
I'm already half amazed that it's not just about some girl who's dying in a bed somewhere in a hospital slowly. I had any sort of
that's what I'm saying. You
field
gotta,
of dreams
you gotta
type
watch,
moment where they go find the elusive
watch it.
Author.
It's pretty good. They got a lot of things happen.
Now, did it touch you? Did you get a little choked up there?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
but because of like I say, there's other things in it. It's not just these people. And I'm not gonna. I don't want to ruin the ending, but it's. You know, inevitable. I guess you can see it coming. I didn't see it coming because I got caught up in the secondary story with the author and stuff. But they do, you know, there are twists. There are things in it.
All right. Keep my eye out for that one then. I've heard repeatedly, like I said, good things about this. So
yeah, it's way better. It's better than you think it would be. I guess it is unexpected in many ways.
Unexpected.
I take that back.
Exactly, yeah.
It is unexpected. It's much better than you think, believe me.
Unexpected is how I would term The Kingsman, which I saw this week. And
in a good way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, I give this one, so people are going to mock me when I say this, but I give it our highest rating. I give it the 4-star. I give this one, it's as good as Triple X, which is, you know, people will laugh when I say that, but I know you're a fan of that movie. I thought that was a lot of fun playing with the Bond image. This is smarter than that movie by a long shot. It's
smarter.
It's more,
how? In story or in little jabs? Is this jokey at all?
Oh, absolutely. The humor is very there. But it's also, it's very English. Let's not, you know, mix any things here. The accents can be a little tough to work through at some points. But it's also got, it's made for and made by people that are Bond fanatics. And there's a very telling line in this movie when, because they reference Bond and Jason Bourne and Jack Bauer and things like that. And somebody says, you know, are you a fan of the Bond movies? And he says, the earlier ones, the new ones are too serious. And it's true, you know, and this movie
and that
has
movie's
that
not serious,
kind of goofy. It's the anti-Skyfall, you know, it's just in the same realm of things that are going on and you know, that kind of universe of the super spy and the gentleman and whatnot. But I like the main kid. It's very Triple X in the fact that this is the recruitment one. You know, this is where they pull him off the streets and they put him through the test. And can he make it? And is he going to be an agent even though he's on the edge? And, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it all works. And any movie that ends with an anal sex joke, I am in on. I mean, this movie is funny. It's exceedingly violent, but it's also
he didn't like the interview as much.
I didn't like interview as much, but this one, man, I'm telling you.
So this one gets it right.
It's just it's cast very well. It's written very smart, and I've never been a fan of these movies. Even like Kick-Ass, I thought, you know, I'm mildly interested
in. Kick-Ass.
Yeah, but even that, it's hard for me to get in something that's so. It's just kind of like a spoof of the genre. Where
so
this,
aware of what it is.
Yeah, and this it worked in this for whatever reason. The action worked. The acting, the writing. I don't know, it's a little long, but at the same time, aren't all Bond movies a little long?
But it looked really entertaining. Like the action looked entertaining, even in the trailers at least.
When it came out and made the money it made and has now had the word of mouth and the legs it's had, I can see why. You know, you watch something like this and you go, okay, I get it. This is franchise now. I would actually welcome a sequel, although I don't know how they could do that. But I really do like the kid who played the main role. Colin Firth's good. And even Samuel Jackson with his little lisp in his, you know, world domination is fun. It's just a fun movie. So, and everybody is just as smart as everybody else in this. You know, the bad guy isn't some sort of dumb fool. Everybody knows what their role is and they're very aware of it in the sense of how they fit in the like kind of Bond universe. And so it's fun.
Cool.
All right. Movie that's not so fun, very quickly here, is Focus, the Will Smith movie. I just got a chance to catch this one. And very briefly here, I will say I give it a modest recommendation. Two great scenes the movie does not make, but they do have two great scenes in this movie. And it feels like they...
Well, is more comedy or more serious?
It's a lot more serious, but they do have moments of comedy in it. There's a great supporting turn by a character who plays a very large computer geek, you know, we'll say sexual things in very bad moments. But
large as in fat or large as in super geek?
Large, both. It's funny, but, you know, Will Smith's very charismatic and very good in this role. And Margot Robbie from Wolf of Wall Street is stunningly beautiful. I mean, she is just it's a modern beauty. It's just, I'm kidding, your eyes off her. So she's very good in this, too. I like their chemistry in the movie. I just wanted the movie to be more. I thought it had all the elements to be a little bit more substance. And it was kind of on the surface. I mean, there really wasn't a lot at stake a lot of the points in this movie when you thought there would be. And like I said, there's two great scenes, and I feel like the rest of the movie was just a clothesline to plot around. I felt like they had the ending and the middle, and they tried to figure out how the fuck they could work the rest of the scenes to connect it all, because it really is two different movies. It's about two short films that they combined into one movie. So it's a little disjointed, but modest recommendation because of the clever writing, because the dialogue is nice. These guys can write. You saw Crazy Stupid Love, you know.
It seems overly long. Yeah, Crazy Stupid Love's a little overly long. Like, a little overly complicated, but it works out to where, it's worth it. It's really good. But this movie felt the same way. Like, maybe, you know, and when that kind of stuff doesn't hit necessarily 100%, it does. It feels like a little bit of a weight on the movie.
You know, I just always con artist movies, you have to compare to other con artist movies because this is.
It's true. They're, and some of those are hard to get through.
And I would say the only one that I think absolutely got it right was Matchstick Men, because the ending of that was such
but
a wow.
And that movie feels overly long. It feels a little...
Well, that's a Ridley Scott one, because that one's very atmospheric. This one, they try to give it that weight, but it's really comes off as insubstantial. Yeah. It's as light as in the caper that they pull and the way they get away with things. It's almost like, come on, Ocean's 11 was a little bit more believable. So,
well, that's not a vote of confidence in that regard.
Yeah. So when things are finally explained and you walk out of the theater, you shouldn't rethink the scheme too much. But, you know, a mild recommendation on that. What about Laggies? Talk about Laggies for a little
Laggies,
bit.
Laggies, again, loved it. I thought this was really good. This is I would place this squarely in the independent film genre. It's a comedy romance about a young woman who's going through a quarter-life crisis, a la young adult, in a way. Her boyfriend proposes to her, and she doesn't really fit in with her friends anymore, with the group from high school. And she befriends this 16-year-old girl, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, and the young woman's Keira Knightley, and winds up spending a week hiding out to find herself at this girl's house. I thought it was great. And it has the performances are, I think, off the chart. The writing, again, great. Just dialogue's wonderful in this. It's funny, and goddamned if Sam Rockwell isn't just awesome, and why is he not in more things?
Yeah, I like Sam Rockwell. I mean, he's a great screen presence.
Holy shit. Every single time, you forget about him. He's so forgettable off screen for some reason. I don't know why, but every time he's on screen, just, you know, blows you away. And even in something as simple as this, just really good. So I like this one too.
Yeah, I thought this one was good. Now, Annabelle was the horror film from October, which is a sequel to The Conjuring. I didn't see this yet. No, I never saw The Conjuring.
You haven't seen The Conjuring. Well, The Conjuring's really
good.
But
I'm not a horror guy. Now, you're a horror guy.
The Conjuring's really good. Watch The Conjuring.
That's what everybody said. Is this worth watching, though, if I watch The Conjuring?
This is more of a jump scare movie.
But is it worth it? It's a prequel, right, to what's going on there?
No, it's just a spinoff. It has nothing to do with The Conjuring, really, aside from the doll, which makes an appearance in The Conjuring. You know, it kind of. It really doesn't have anything to do with Conjuring at all.
Okay, but this doll now has now her own Chucky type.
This is just telling situation. You, yeah, the creation and story of this of the evil doll. It's not a bad movie, but it's just a standard horror movie.
Worth
seeing. Yeah, you like horror movies, here, watch it. It was okay, you know, but it's not The Conjuring. This is not The Conjuring's just it's just a good movie. It's like The Exorcist, you know. It's kind of like, it's one of those things where you're just like, oh yeah, this is just, it kind of breaks, it's a horror movie, sure, but it kind of breaks out of those boundaries a little bit, you know, out of that genre.
Yeah, I just, it's hard for me to get into the horror stuff. It really is, especially when it
then
is.
Then you probably wouldn't like this.
Yeah, when it's this kind of, I mean, very rarely do they work, but when they do work, man, they get under my skin. But this, The Conjuring, I was told, because was it last summer or the summer before, how well it is. But my kind of horror stuff is like The Purge, even though people will say that's more of an action movie, but yeah. Maybe that's why it's my kind of horror stuff. But I like the thinking
that's
behind
more
that.
Guts and like. Okay, but that's The Conjuring too. I mean, you're talking about The Purge 2, really, is what you're talking about, right?
Right.
And that's how The Conjuring is. I mean, The Purge 2, to me, I watched that too, and I'm like, oh, this is a real movie. You know, it goes beyond the genre. It goes beyond the necessary means of just a genre movie, and it has a real movie is in there. And that's how The Conjuring kind of is. You know, it's not, whereas Annabelle is just kind of like, yeah, bad shit happens. There's a ghost. It's in this doll.
What I'm saying, that this isn't any like The Grudge Part 2 or any sort of like shit sequel like that.
It's not a bad horror. Yeah, it's not a shitty. I didn't think it was a shitty movie. It's just not, you know, a good. I'd say it's a solid 3-star horror movie. You know, you watch it, you get everything you want out of it. You just don't. There's no elevation. You know, you don't get anything else.
And of course, they leave the door open for a sequel, right?
Yeah, well, I sure. I mean,
do they set it up specifically like the last scene is just totally the lead out for a sequel? That's like the horror movie.
No, but
it'll stand by.
Well, yeah. I mean, it starts, I guess, sequel primed from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about the dolls in The Conjuring, I mean, they didn't show. This isn't the story of how the people in The Conjuring get the doll. It's the story of the doll. So they could do a sequel to this. But in The Conjuring, the doll is being kept in their, you know, like Indiana Jones style basement where they have all the shit, the evil stuff that they found. It's kept in this glass case. And it's like blessed by a priest, you know, every week or whatever. And so that's where it is. You can't really do anything after that. But there is space in between to make a sequel.
And I'm sure they will. I mean, sequel ready for any horror movies. So they're looking for the next one.
It made money in a way, I guess.
So you finally caught up with Gone Girl.
Yes, I did.
I didn't like Gone Girl. I liked the first hour of Gone Girl. What did you think?
Well, I liked Gone Girl. I didn't
the whole
like
thing,
it. Yeah,
obviously.
I liked the whole thing, but I didn't like it as much as the other things in its area. But the problem, like you say, you liked the first half, didn't like the second half. And that was kind of my whole issue with this movie was... And I guess can we fully talk about this?
Absolutely. Once the reveal
this
that
is
Ben
so
Affleck,
old, right?
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, I guess we should say if you haven't seen it. It's taken me a long time, but you're right. Once you know that she's still alive.
Right.
At the minute
it
that hits, you're like
everything.
Whoa, now we have to start over again. And you literally it's like starting over a new movie.
Right. In a movie that's less like interesting that. With a character I don't like.
I thought it was still good because I was still on. No. I still like the Ben Affleck side of it. Okay, it's like okay, well now she's crazy, obviously batshit crazy, but we're gonna deal with him trying to beat her.
Okay, but
I still like that part of it.
I agree that everything that Affleck's character was doing was still intriguing, but uh-huh. everything that her character was doing was so standard. Did you not know she was going to get robbed by those people? Did you not know she was going to go back to the other guy? Did she not know she
was
going to
do something?
Yes, but
I didn't know how
different.
She was going to get out of those situations, which turned out to be not very good. But I was wondering myself, like, oh, because there was a lot of setup. Like you think, oh, well, maybe is she going to be outed by people who saw her? Maybe... maybe this, maybe that. There was so many directions
scenes,
they
man.
Could go. Yeah, they turned out to be useless. But while
the
I was watching
where
it, it was
the guy
okay.
in prison who she claimed rape on before. Why didn't the people at the campground step forward and say, this is that person who was here? There's a lot of loose elements in that movie that I did not care for.
I thought that worked because you didn't know, because that set you up to not know what necessarily was going to happen next. In the end, they weren't used, and yeah, in a way, it's a bit of a letdown because really they didn't. The ending is just like, yeah, all right. You know, it kind of goes against because you want him to win, really, right? And he doesn't.
Not only does he not win, I mean, it's a mess. I think
he's a little bitch in the end, as far as I'm concerned. I was like, good God, you know. But I don't know. I thought that wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
I thought the movie started strongly, and after about an hour in, when the reveal is done and she turns into sort of like Hitchcockian vamp who's running around with this bright blonde hair and she turns into this femme fatale character, it just really...
But neither one of them...
It wasn't interesting.
I do say you want him to win, but when they do when they turn it around on him and she's still alive and all that, suddenly they try to make him like a better person, but he's an asshole for the first half of the movie. He's not... Like a nice person. He's not a good person. There's no good person in this fucking movie.
There
Maybe
isn't
his
a likable character in this movie. Find me one likable character in
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. So
that's
there's not
my
really...
problem as well. It was a 2.5-hour movie with people I didn't like. So, yeah, and not in a good way. I can like movies about people I don't like, but this was very irritating to me. So yeah, I'm glad you got the same overall impression of that. But you are giving it a recommendation, though, because of.
I think it's worth seeing for people. I think people are going to enjoy it. You know. It's not as good. Yeah, it's got its fucking problems, but at least it's an elevation above a lot of the other shit out there. You know, it does. It's the lower end of the high end, if you will, is what I would say.
That should be on the poster or the DVD box.
It's true. It's not as good as you think it's going to be, but not as bad as it could have been. It's worth watching, I thought.
That was my exact reaction.
But it's a throwaway thing, right? Like, I would never want to watch this ever again.
I want you to see Interstellar next, because that's exactly how I felt. The low end of the high point of the low end, or vice versa. The low end of the high point. The Gone Girl's a one-trick pony. And people were... You wanted to tell me, on a second viewing, I said, my goodness, on a second viewing, there's enough Fincher movies I'd rather review than.
How did you have a second viewing? I don't know. I think other Ben Affleck stuff. I mean, obviously Argo, you know.
Hollywood Land.
The Town. Oh, yeah. Hollywood Land's really good for a lot of people who haven't seen that. But of course, I mean, Gone Baby Gone is to me the high mark of all those movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was really disappointed in Gone Girl because this was the one that really kicked off Oscar season, and it just didn't hit for me. Okay, let's do the Trailer Addict portion of the show. Take a break and come back, or you want to jump right into it? You make the call.
I don't have a break. Are we going to do this streaming thing?
Oh, yeah. Let's do the streaming pick of the week.
If you want to.
Oh, shit.
All righty. Who's going first?
I'll let you go first.
I get to go first?
Yeah, are any of your recommendations streaming?
No.
Nope.
But I do have a recommendation for a Sam Rockwell movie.
What you got? It
fits within the indie genre, since that's apparently what I'm into right now. But I watched this a while back. It's a movie called The Winning Season. He plays a coach of like a high school girls' basketball team. And he's this drunk, horrible person. Emma Roberts is the girl that he kind of mentors, or part of this team. And I really liked it. Streaming, it's not the most amazing movie ever, but it's really good. And Sam Rockwell's fucking awesome in it, as he is in everything. So if you like him, definitely check it out. Winning Season.
All right. Well, I got a sports pick for you as well. Mine's kind of a cheat because it is on the Netflix streaming service, and it's really one of the 30 for 30 ESPN installments. But it's called Of Miracle and Men, and it is about the 1980 Russian hockey team. They've done a longer documentary that we talked about a couple weeks ago called Red Army on the show. This is a truncated version, and it is well worth your time. They really do a good job humanizing these Russian machines as we saw them from 1980 and the men behind the politics. So I guess we both have sports movies here. I wanted to see The Winning Season. I did see that on there. And
it's really good just because if anyone else was in it, yeah, it might not have been as good. But
Rockwell is a nice, interesting presence on Springs. He's so quirky, too. You know, he dances around a lot. I mean, sometimes he's dancing around to James Brown. He's always smoking. He's got an offbeat delivery. He's kind of like a better-looking Giovanni Ribisi in a weird way.
And when I think of, like, a movie like Moon or, you know, what was so good about Moon? It was frickin' Sam Rockwell was the best part. He's the best part of most of the movies he's in.
Yeah, Charlie's Angels, he's the villain. It works because of that. You know, the first one, he's great in that. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, I can think of plenty of movies.
Yeah, I would really like to see him in more stuff, you know. And Prime, really, he'd be great in like a Marvel movie. You know, he'd be great because he can do characters. So.
He's actually underrated as a comedian, too. He's got a very dry delivery, I think, that can work.
Yeah, which is why he was so good in Laggies, because he plays... I guess that's why he's so good in the indie realm. Moon's really an indie sci-fi movie, you know, because he can do comedy in a serious fashion, you know, which is what that requires.
Yeah. Yeah, big ups to him. Okay, let's take a break and get to the Trailer Addict.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Ooh.
We have a number of trailers today. We have
good God.
Plethora.
Everything ranging from low budget to high budget, right?
And I have to say, I'm not giving anything away, that I'm excited about most of the trailers on today's show. I really am. I think the one I'm most excited about that I want to talk about extremely quickly here is Ex Machina, because I don't know what I saw here, but I like it.
My fear for this is that this is just your standard run sci-fi. In watching the trailer, you get the sense. It's just such a basic sci-fi movie. And the guy shows up, he's going to test this robot, right, for her AI ability at this guy's private compound. And then it turns out to be, well, who's testing who? And you think, well, shit, you know, I mean, I don't know. Who's the robot? Is he a robot? Is this that? What's this? You know, standard sci-fi stuff.
But it is written and directed by Alex Garland, who did The Beach, who did, you know, a lot of things. But he also was behind that Dread script that we really liked. So this looks like that kind of low budget. I saw this trailer in the theater, and it looked gorgeous on a large screen. I was very impressed when A24 came up, and then the next shot was a helicopter flying over these beautiful, you know, I mean, I just didn't expect something that kind of vast.
What had millions of dollars of budgets on it. I mean, the budget for this was like close to $20 million or something.
It's beautiful. I mean, look,
it's a small movie, but not that small.
It looks like it goes along the lines of Splice or something like that, which plays with the whole sexuality.
Which isn't very good either. My worry, though, is every time they try to do this the high end of the low budget sci-fi stuff, it turns out to be a bit of a letdown.
Yeah. Like Splice, which we at least had a few scenes that were intriguing, but
well, it's an intriguing idea. You know, I understand why the movie gets made, and I understand why this gets made to why they take a shot at it, but I'm worried that it's gonna not be something that good.
I'm excited as well because Oscar Isaacs is in this, who I thought was fantastic in A Most Violent Year, and is quickly becoming one of my favorite actors. These guys are real chameleon. So I think he plays a scientist in this, the guy that gets him onto the island or into the compound. So huge change of pace from what he just did. So I couldn't believe that was him. I was listening to the voice and I thought, my goodness. moving on, let's talk about Sean Penn in The Gunman, directed by Pierre Morel, who did the original Taken. This is based on a bestseller, and this is really Sean Penn's bid to get into that Liam
Neeson.
Where
has he been?
Do you miss him? I'm not a Sean Penn fan. Are you guys?
Neither
Sean
am
fan?
I. Neither am I. But that's because I don't really see him in a lot of things. I know people, you know, really do like him, but I can't recall a lot
why
of Sean Penn stuff that I'm like, that's so good. Although this looks great and he looks good in it.
You think this looks great? I actually think this looks like the worst one on our show today.
This looked perfectly fine. I thought it looked, I don't know. I got. There's other ones that look worse than this. This at least plays into its wheelhouse and looks to be exactly what you would expect to get out of it.
It looks along the lines of the November Man, though. I mean,
Sean,
you could have put
I think this looks way better than November Man.
Well, only because it's got a better cast. It's the same type of idea. The slow motion walking away and, you know, can you do this at your age? And who's out after you?
I think the trailers are very different. And these movies sound very different. This feels more like a ramped up action film.
I get like the International / the November Man vibe from this. I mean, but then again, I'm not a Sean Penn guy and I really don't miss him. I thought he was good in the Walter Mitty cameo that he had as that kind of eccentric photographer. I thought he played
was
that
good
well.
In that. If you haven't seen, I mean, the one movie, and I mean, we talk about movies, types of movies I don't like, the multiple storyline movies, but there's a movie called 21 Grams that he's really good in and is a really good movie.
I mean, people will point to Milk and Mystic River and stuff like that, but the only movie, I mean, 21 Grams, I didn't mind. But
I like 21 Grams quite a lot.
Yeah, no, it was good. He's really good in it. That's a very sad movie. It's a hard watch. But the one I really liked back in the day was The Falcon and the Snowman with him and Timothy Hutton, where they were selling two California kids that were selling secrets to the Russians in the 80s. And that's a crazy movie. And he's very good as a cokehead in the 80s, kind of Robert Downey Jr. type performance. But Sean Penn seems like such of a prick in real life that he comes off like that in the movies. And
you're really into getting into people in real life and projecting that into their movies.
I guess I can't get away
you?
From it because Penn's just such a prick. I mean, his acting is hailed as this kind of method minimalism.
I know, and I don't get that because
so
I don't think it's that good.
Laconic. It's not interesting to me. It's too lazy on the screen.
But I just don't see it. I guess that amazing Sean Penn acting. I don't see it.
Me neither. It's like Ryan Gosling. I mean, very rarely does that show up anymore.
I think I don't have anything against him. I think he's perfectly fine. I just don't see the why everyone thinks he's so great. Okay, so we're a little split on this one. That's fine. It's really it's called The Gunman. It's not a very important movie.
Yeah, this is about as important as 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah.
All right. This one is going to be interesting though. Raiders, the greatest fan film ever made, is a documentary on a fan movie that was made. This was a project that took 7 years to make.
This idea, I liked when they found this movie, and I think we even talked about it.
We did.
Great idea for a documentary. I'm very interested in seeing this.
Yeah, they're chronicling the fact that these kids made a shot-for-shot remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark from 1982 to 89, and now all these years later, they've reassembled to get that final scene done with basically a professional crew, it looks like, and somewhat of a budget at their current ages. Looks fun. This just looks like the kind of movie about movie making that I want to see, you know, and
these guys. Which is about fans, yeah, because they're real fans.
And the life it's
taken
on. And
it looks
to
have an actual story behind the scenes as well. That's going to be interesting as well.
Right. And the fact that these kids, you can see the thing on YouTube. There's their little short, you know, that they've done. So it's not a mystery, but the fact of the matter is the story behind how they did all this stuff. Because you watch that and go, how did somebody not get killed? These kids are hanging off a moving truck and, you know, all sorts of OSHA regulations being violated.
Yeah. And obviously, this was found by Eli Roth and shared with all of his crew. So, of course, they are all in the documentary as well, which garners it a little more weight, you know, as far as that goes. So you are going to get to hear from other fans of Raiders as well. And looking at, because it's impressive in a way when someone makes a fan film. You know, we just had two fan films that got in trouble recently. But it's still impressive when someone makes something out of love, you know, purely out of passion and love, with no intent on making any money off it,
or for really audiences wide to see it. And then something like this happens, and then these grown men are telling you their stories, now their friendship, they haven't talked for so long, and the girl got in between them, and all this kind of interesting elements on top of the fact that they're going to try to redo this last sequence all these years later, you know, 30-something years later, is quite incredible. Mm-hmm. And this looks like a real treat for fans of not only the Indiana Jones series, but just movies in general. So check out this documentary. It will be coming out soon. It's called Raiders, the Greatest Fan Film Ever Made. And you can see the YouTube version of their fan film. I believe it's called Raiders, the Apparition on YouTube.
I don't remember. You can just look it up. You'll find it.
You'll find it.
You'll find it, no problem.
All right, the next trailer is Love and Mercy, and this is a very short trailer starring Paul Dano and John Cusack, both playing the role of Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys lead singer and kind of their guiding hand. This is a short trailer, so I think it's hard to get a sense of exactly what's going on here.
It is, but especially the John Cusack part.
Nonetheless, extremely intriguing, I think.
Yeah, I'm interested, actually, in seeing this. I don't know if that means shit. But most of the time for these kinds of things, I haven't been very interested. But this looks good. I like the idea of the older looking back on the younger. But you're right. You don't get a sense of the cast in this teaser trailer. Is it wise to focus on one person rather than the Beach Boys themselves?
Yeah.
Do you think? Do you think that makes more sense?
This isn't a Jobs type portrayal or kind of a minimized look at a larger-than-life personality. So,
well, it's going to have good music. We know that.
Yeah. And they got the rights to the music, at least. So, you know, but I do like the fact that Cusack is in this. I feel like that gives it a little bit more weight. And Paul Dano.
Yeah, me too. Well, he looks good in this. I mean, I will give him that. I just wanted to see what everybody else was doing. Elizabeth Banks is in this, who's great. Paul Giamatti's great. And like you said, John Cusack, but there's just one shot at John Cusack. Like, oh, and by the way, John Cusack's going to play the older guy.
I was surprised in Cusack when they morphed into Cusack's face. I thought, oh, shit. Is that Nicolas Cage? No, it's John Cusack.
I wonder how much, because I don't know, is there a lot of older, does he do anything when he's older?
Not sure. I'm not even really sure what he did when he was younger. So that's why I'm kind of interested in seeing this.
Apparently he was a genius.
And did a lot of drugs. Music. There's some madness in there. So yeah, they throw genius around quite a bit in this trailer. I'm not sure.
I still think it's interesting. I'd like to see it. The Beach Boys are obviously very iconic. So
the musical biopic is coming back in a strong way lately. I mean, just last year you had Jersey Boys, Get On Up, the Jimi Hendrix Experience movie.
Did it ever go away? I mean, I felt it's been lingering since Ray, really.
Yeah, that's true. It's been a good 10 years. All right, let's talk about a documentary, Deep Web. This is a Starz documentary, Encore, Netflix original type thing, much like Downloaded. Did you ever see Downloaded? The one about
yeah, I don't think I watched that one.
Netflix or not Netflix, Napster.
They got a new one on. Oh no, I did watch that one.
It was good.
They got a new one, a new documentary on Netflix about stuff like that too.
Well, this one's called Deep Web, and this is about the underground site known as Silk Road, and the guy who was busted here in the Bay Area running it, or they thought was running it, and went by the name of the Dread Pirate Roberts, which cracks me up because that's obviously a Princess Bride reference. Mm-hmm. And one of the most feared persons on the internet going by a Princess Bride reference. But this documentary argues the case that this person wasn't the only guy running it and that there are a numerous amount of people. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of the documentary, but the case they're making for this guy is at least in the documentary teaser, very weak.
Well, here's the problem with this is that this is too early to be making this documentary.
Because they haven't had the trial
yet.
Plain
and simple. Yeah, we don't know what the FBI knows. I don't know what these guys know. And I guarantee you they know a lot of shit that they aren't telling you. And this guy may just, you know, he may have the reddest hands in the world. He may be totally fucked.
Yeah.
And that's going to be what I believe he probably is. Because they can track stuff far better than you think they can. Even on the dark web. I don't know why this is called deep web.
Yeah, really, it should Silk be called Road's
Tor. More of a, what they call the dark web. But,
mm-hmm.
No. Or the dark net. I don't know.
And there's, you know, other sites just like it and whatnot. And the fact that there's more than one Dread Pirate, though shit, it's the internet. Everything's done in collaboration. I mean, it's not groundbreaking that there could be more than one.
Yeah, that's not surprising either. But that certainly doesn't get him off the hook either.
Correct. Yeah. You know, and they busted him with his laptop open here in the San Francisco library using public internet access. So he's pretty screwed.
Yeah, it feels a little like they're trying to cash in on a lot of these documentaries where they take the guy or someone wrongly accused, you know.
However, the documentary, the trailer for it is at least cut well. I'll say that. So it has a little intriguing flair to it. But
well, it looks entertaining.
I agree. You're right. It's way too early for this to be coming out, no matter what the facts are that they state in it. We don't know the full story yet. We probably might never know because of the government handling of it.
Yeah.
Oh. Now we're blackballed. We just said the two words.
Government handling?
Yeah, there you go. What do we got next? Dark Places?
All right, let's go on. Yeah, Dark Places. The new Charlize Theron movie.
This is the international trailer. So this actually has not been released in the U.S. yet, a trailer. No, this is coming out in
international trailer.
France first. Gone Girl author Gillian Flynn is behind this one as well.
Yeah, this looks good. I'd want to see this as well. I think that
I don't think this looks good. Do you think this looks good?
Really, I disagree. I think this looks good. I really do want to see it. I think Charlize Theron's great in these kinds of roles. I like Chloe Grace Moretz. I mean, not that that really matters to this movie, but I'm intrigued. I because again, Gone Girl, I still think Gone Girl's worth watching. You know, you can argue that it's not very good, fine, but it's still worth watching once. And I do enjoy mysteries, and I think that I would get at least a little kick out of watching this. It does look like it goes down a twisty road.
Granted, it does, and the central concept is interesting in the trailer. But the problem with this, and the problem I had with a lot of Gone Girl, although it was finessed mm-hmm. a little bit by Fincher, I'm sure, is that some of this is too on the nose. I mean, when he says to her, "You're just as imprisoned as I am," I mean, my goodness, that is so... It feels pedestrian.
It's cliche, but that's
yeah.
Funny.
Good God, it's. But it felt like that, and I feel like I've seen this movie before in a lot of ways. You know, I feel like the kind of the person closed
yeah.
in, and even Charlize Theron feels like she's repeating
that's
herself.
Fine.
In this role.
I'll watch it. I don't have a problem with any of that.
I didn't care for this trailer all that much, although I do like Moretz and Theron. I want that known because I think they're both fantastic actresses.
Mm-hmm.
We got next, No Escape.
This is the movie that I think is the worst.
Really? I was impressed by this trailer.
There's another one, too.
I didn't know what the hell this thing was.
Really? Yeah, well, that's the problem with this, right? I'm watching this, and the whole time I'm thinking, you know, why does this look like it should be a serious drama, yet somehow it looks like, at times, I could take a lot of shots out of this and a lot of things that happen, and it's a campy action movie. When he throws the daughter across the fucking thing,
okay.
It's like, why is that happening? Why is there a point where he's like Rambo with the fucking AK-47 and he's standing up on top of all those sticks and stuff? And he's like, what the fuck is that? I'm sorry. It looks very confused to me.
When this is, we're talking about No Escape with Owen Wilson and Pierce Brosnan, and Owen Wilson takes his family to Asia for either a sabbatical or to live there. It's not really known, and he finds an expat in Pierce Brosnan, and they're having drinks one night outside the hotel. The police and the locals start rioting, and all hell breaks loose. And I'm telling you, when Owen Wilson is standing out in the street and you got the police on the right and the crowd gathering on the left, I felt like Jack Burton in the middle of a gang fight in downtown Big Trouble in Little China. I mean, what the hell's going on here?
But that's
Wayne?
What I mean. It's halfway comical, a lot of the stuff. It's too over the top, I think. It doesn't.
This is obviously trying to go for much. The same audience that
when
Force
the tank
Majeure
shoots
went
and they
from,
get out of there.
Yeah, this is not.
Feels like a natural disaster movie, except it's Asian guys. Which I don't understand either.
How
is this going to play in Asia
with Captain Phillips mixed in?
Yeah, I don't get this. I don't think this looks very good. I wouldn't watch it.
I want to watch it because I'm so yeah, intrigued to see what Owen Wilson looks like toting an AK-47 in the movie. You know, this might be the looniest movie we've seen since Drive Angry. We don't know.
Yeah, it could be entertaining, but as far as a movie goes, it doesn't look very good.
This is how ineffectual this whole thing was. I looked at this on our rundown here, and I had just watched this trailer before we went on air. And I look at this, and I'm thinking, what the hell is No Escape? Until you started talking about it again. I mean, that's going to jog my memory, so thank you. I was thinking about the Ray Liotta movie from 1994. So.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel – he has done – obviously action movies and stuff before, but it does feel a little bit behind enemy lines in a way.
I forgot about Behind Enemy Lines, that he was actually in that. That was a strange casting choice back then, and it still remains that to this day.
It still looks weird.
Yeah.
All right. What else? We got
Mr. Holmes. The teaser trailer for Mr. Holmes, Ian McKellen, Sir Ian McKellen, or Sire, if you will.
Exactly.
Don't you forget it, is portraying Sherlock Holmes in his later age, and he's got one great last mystery in him. This is very reminiscent to me of Finding Neverland in that kind of
that's
fantastical
exactly what I
tone.
Thought, or at least that's how they're trying to sell it.
Yeah, and I love that they say from the director of Gods and Monster, Kinsey, and Dreamgirls, and I want to say, no, it's from the director of Candyman 2. That's really his first movie. It's not mince words here.
Gods and Monsters isn't very good.
Kinsey's debatable in Dreamgirls on the fence as well. Yeah, but Bill Condon can direct. But the fact is that this trailer, I don't know what to make of it. It looks intriguing in a sense.
I want to see it because, again, this looks like a good mystery type thing. I could get into this fine. But like the Downton Abbey music playing and
it's a little too
the way
precious.
It looks. Yeah, it's like, like you say, the Finding Neverland type selling of it, which comes halfway through the movie, really. The first half is, the trailer feels stunted and doesn't feel quite right either. So I don't know. I'm a bit confused on it. Sounds like a good idea, though.
If this is the kind of Oscar bait that we're going to have to sit through next year, at least I can watch this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? At least this isn't that stuffy intellectual stuff that at least a bit of humor and fun and mischief about it looked like. That was what they were trying to sell, at least in this spot. Mr. Holmes on that one. The last trailer we have for tonight is Selfless.
Which is like face off. In case you didn't catch that, that's exactly what this is.
And this is pretty much face off, but with Ben Kingsley and Ryan Reynolds switching, and Ben Kingsley.
But with your guy, and the director, you know who directed this, right?
No, who made this?
Tarsem Singh, your guy. You like this guy for
the
visuals.
Oh, no wonder. Actually, I like this
trailer.
Where
the fuck are the visuals, really? This is a fucking stupid movie. But where are the visuals? Where's Tarsem Singh in this movie?
Yeah, this is the guy who was behind The Cell and The Immortals. It is
The Cell,
very
Mirror, The Fall, a movie you really liked, I thought was shit.
Yeah.
Immortals, I think, is shit. But they all look good. They all have strikingly amazing looks to them, which is absent from this movie.
And this isn't the first time that Ryan Reynolds has done a body switch movie. Let's not forget The Change Up, which looks like it might even be superior to this.
I mean, this feels, to me, when I watch this, feels like a Surrogates type thing. It doesn't look very good.
No, but you know what? Who does look good in this is Reynolds, man. Reynolds gives shit his all. I mean, he keeps trying to find different material lately. I got to give the guy credit. I mean,
the problem with this movie is that Ben Kingsley is in it. And if you know anything about Ben Kingsley, if he's in the movie, it's ruined.
It's the Kingsley factor.
And he's good, but the movie's not going to be any good. Yeah, it is. It's true. I'm sorry. It is true.
Take a look around. It started a long time ago, but I mean, the land is.
He's still good. The amazing thing is, he's still good in the movie. And you're like, yeah, he's good, but the movie, it just sucks.
It falls around in part of it. Prince of Persia. I mean,
but you're right. Yeah, and I thought he was good in Prince of Persia, but that movie sucks.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, I do like the cast. I do like Ryan Reynolds, but the movie itself looks, you know, a bit shitty. But I'd still watch it.
I didn't mind this trailer at all. So I would watch this, and I do think that it has a Total Recall type element to it. I always like movies
the memories
where
coming back.
Well, Limitless really is what I thought initially. You know, the idea that you could have it all. So. And I like the fact that when he gets the younger body, he's running as fast as he can. And he's with women, and the glib remark about not seeing a body like that for 50 years. That all works. It's just the deja vu type aspect. I mean that in the movie with Denzel Washington. They kind of put that whole thing in there where. Is this a secondary life, or what dimension is he in, or who?
Well, this does feel. I mean, you talk about Denzel Washington. This does feel a bit like what was the other Ryan Reynolds watched a movie?
Safe House.
Doesn't it feel like Ryan Reynolds again? This feels. If I took a lot of the shots out of the last half of this movie and showed it to you and said this was Safe House 2, you might believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's very.
Because he kind of goes on that. Yeah, well, but in a way, again, it's like a moving movie. He's got to go and. Figure this stuff out, and he's got to go see for himself, if you will.
I just thought Limitless memories. Too, you know, selfless, limitless. I just thought like this is very similar to the guy who can have it all. Face Off,
although not selfless. As good as Face Off because there's no Travolta or Cage. So
well, and Kingsley's not imitating, or I should say, Reynolds not imitating Kingsley, and vice versa. You know, like Kent.
I thought he was a little bit. I thought
I saw it too initially.
Right, but then it went away.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree. I thought I saw it when he was in the when they first switched brains or minds or whatever. I thought I felt it a little bit. Like, oh, he kind of sounds like him, but it went away.
That's when I thought, oh, well, here we go with the Face-Off thing, you know, because that's the whole, really the fun to me of Face-Off. I know you don't like it as much as I do, but I love Face-Off because
it's fun. It's stupid.
We get
fun,
to though. Watch them play each other, you know. It's amazing to watch, you know, Cage playing Travolta playing Cage.
It's a stupid movie, though.
Exactly.
But it is stupid fun.
So I really thought the trailers on today's show were actually a cut above our normal. So I think the weakest one is The Gunman, but you like that. You say... No Escape is the weakest of the crop today.
Or Selfless, take your pick.
Yeah, I think Dark Places looks...
In reality, none of these, I don't know.
Right? We'll see, it's actually a decent
crop. None of these are very that important, but they all look like... I would watch every single one of them and probably enjoy it, so
which is
fine.
What 2015 is shaping up to be, is an eminently watchable year in movies.
Well, there's so many movies, too. Yeah, how many movies are big movies? I mean, these are all look like small movies. I'd love to watch these, you know, at home, sitting on the couch. These would be great for that. But there's so many big movies that you have to go to the theaters this year to go see as well.
And which we cannot undersell, Mad Max Fury Road, which continues to release little trailers and international snippets. The machinery in that is mind-boggling. I cannot wait to see Mad Max. I do think this is going to be a sleeper hit this summer. And Poltergeist as well, I think it's going to be massive from the people, you know, buzzing about it since that trailer has come out. I keep hearing more. And Furious 7 is another one that people just will not stop talking about. I'm amazed to hear this many people talking about that.
That just looks like so much fun, though, right? It looks like, I mean, dare I say, you know, a rejuvenation again of it.
Did you catch the trailer for the spoof for Superfast?
No.
All
I
right,
didn't even know it existed.
I want you to watch that. And on next week's show, we will be talking about the trailer for Superfast, the trailer, the spoof of the Fast and Furious franchise, along with many other reviews and, of course, our box office ace prediction game. That's going to wrap up episode 267. We want to thank you guys for joining us. As always, you can find our old podcasts, or I should say our earlier podcasts, on MovieMavericks.com and iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you may be getting your podcasts from. Visit MovieMavericks.com for the latest reviews and go to our iTunes page to review or rate our show. We want to thank you again for joining us. We'll be back with you next Thursday with a new episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. Speaking for Trevor,
yeah,
I'm Jason.
Always speaking for Jace.
I speak for Jason every time I speak.
All the time.
Guy talks for himself on occasion. All right, guys. We want to thank you once again, and we'll be back with you next Thursday. Talk soon.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!